And now, my story. Real people, real stories.
Let's go across the other side of the world and speak to a gentleman called Jeff Woodland, who's got a book out called The Triangle Trade. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning.
Now, you've got an accent. We're in Australia. Are you from here?
Born in Lower Tranmere.
What can you say? And I'm just going to go home shortly past Tranmere. So if there's any letters you want me to drop into the letterbox, I will.
Oh, thanks.
All right. So when did you go to Australia?
1980, we emigrated.
Right. Why Australia?
Well, when I was at sea, I used to be on the Calcutta Australian run.
Mm-hmm.
And I always fancied Australia. I felt at home as soon as I set foot in the place.
And, of course, you travel the world and seen so many places.
Well, yes, I think so.
Yeah. I used to be in the Merchant Navy.
I
used to be with Canadian Pacific.
Oh, yeah? I was with BI.
Right.
British India.
I, unfortunately, didn't last very long. I had that dreadful seasickness, and I really couldn't get cured. I was in a hell of a state.
Oh, I've had seasickness for a week and lost a lot of weight. But generally, I was all right.
Oh, that was lucky. When you first moved to Australia, was it a big wrench to go?
Well, I worked at Manchester Airport, and the merger between British BA and BOAC created British Airways.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't fun anymore. So we just emigrated cold.
Wow.
And turned up in Melbourne.
Was it easy to get in the 80s? Because it's quite difficult
now.
No,
it took me 2 years.
Oh, right.
I had to go for interview after interview.
Yeah.
Interviews at Manchester. And I remember that interview. The guy didn't like the palms. And all he was waiting to do was go to the Oktoberfest.
Mm.
And he said to us, he says, have you got a criminal record? And I was trying to lighten it. And I said, I didn't know we still needed one. He went down like a lead balloon.
That's a great line, Jeff. That's a great line.
We ended up emigrating and leaving power of attorney with a solicitor to sell the house.
Wow.
We had to get out.
You were a traveller, so you used to it. Was it difficult for your wife to make that decision?
Well, she worked for BOAC in the early 60s.
Yeah.
And she travelled to Australia to see some relatives who were out here then.
Mm-hmm.
So she knew what she was coming to because we did 2 holidays in Australia before we actually emigrated.
Yeah.
And so she knew what the lifestyle was like and everything.
Do you ever come back to Liverpool?
I've been back on business. We actually came back last year, which was Maureen... No, 2004 was the first time that Maureen ever went back. She'd been here in just under 25 years.
Did you see a big change?
Oh, yes, yes. And... We brought some people back. In 2008, we did self-catering, self-drive, and 8 of us from Australia and New Zealand. And we went to Liverpool because it was the cultural capital of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing had been finished. The following year, when Maureen and I saw it, everything had been finished. The new shopping centre called?
Yeah, the Liverpool One.
Mm-hmm. All done. But when we were there with the other people, it was just being built. And we were quite disappointed, really, because we wanted to brag about Liverpool.
Mm-hmm. But it's now an amazing place. We've got a new heart,
yes.
And it's really becoming a huge tourist attraction. Now, what made you write the book?
Well, I've written a number of attempts, let's say, at writing. And then I retired in 2002. And 2003, I started writing. And the book seemed to create itself. I've always been interested in history and the background of Liverpool, because growing up on the Merseyside, it was the ideal opportunity to write about the history. And so it kind of formed itself. And it took me about 4 years to write it because there was a lot of research went into it, heaps of research.
Tell us about the book. Tell us what it's about.
It's about a family who set during the dying days of the slave trade, and about a family and a conflict between father and son. Father gets involved in the slave trade because the business isn't doing too well, and he knows he can make money. The son experiences Spanish slave ship, gets back to Liverpool, finds his father's involved in it, and he then tries to prove that you can make a profit on the transatlantic run without resorting to slavery. And he leaves this father and the company and joins the anti-slavery movement and captains a ship to go to Boston and to trade to Boston without slaves. And then he finds when he's in Boston, there's no return traffic, so he has to come up with something. You want me to tell you that part?
No, that's interesting. What made you write about this? I know you're interested in history, but where were you going with the book? Was it all just coming to you, or had you planned and structured it?
No, it kind of grew as it went along. Initially, it was going to be like a Napoleonic war book, but there's so many of them out with better writers than me, you know, like the Hornblower series and that type. And I really didn't want to repeat that, so I wanted something different. So I created a trading company in Liverpool and the conflict between the family who were involved in the trade and the son tries to prove you can make a profit without the trade. And that's how it grew.
Did you find it easy to write, or were you hitting corners and brick walls?
The problem I have is I write a sentence and then I read it, and if it's got historical facts in it, I can't move on until I've checked the facts. I have to, every part of it has to be correct without swamping the reader with facts and figures. He's got to enjoy reading it. So I researched, and there's a character in the book called Nicholson, and Nicholson wins £20,000, and it actually happened to a guy called Leyland in the late 1700s. He won £20,000 and invested it in the slave trade, and then when the slave trade was made illegal, he turned and started a bank, and the bank then became profitable, and bit by bit the bank was taken over by the Midland Bank, and then it was taken over by Barclays, and then it was taken over by Hong Kong Shanghai Bank. So you could say that the banking system is based on slavery as a Liverpool.
Interesting that. Did you have anybody to bounce the ideas off, or have you done this on your own?
I did it on my own.
Yeah.
Because down here, there's, without wishing to be rude about anybody, they wouldn't know what I was talking about. Because they've not been to Liverpool. All our friends are all Australians or not from Merseyside.
Jeff, were you hard to live with while you were writing the book?
Better ask my wife that one. I like to think not. I bounce the ideas off Maureen at times, but we've got different tastes, you see. So I don't know whether I was boring the life out of her or not.
Did you have a deal before you wrote the book, or did you write the book?
No.
No.
I wrote the book, and then I started looking for agents and publishers, and I got knocked back 35 times. So I couldn't find anybody in Australia who was interested in it, because I don't think it's an Australian-based, because it's not an Australian-based story.
Yeah.
No. So it wouldn't work in Australia. So then I contacted 22 agents and publishers in the UK, and each one, some replied, but basically I got knocked back on all of them. And then so I tried America, and 10 or 12 of them in America, and they knocked it back. So I self-published. I had it edited twice, once by a male and once by a female, because I wanted both sexes' input into the creation.
Interesting.
And then I had it printed.
Why were you so determined? I mean, to go through all that, so many people would have put it down and went, I can't believe this.
I believed in it.
Right.
It's to actually produce a book and then somebody gives you money for it. You've done it. And then some of them have been kind enough to write to me and say they enjoyed the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, after about, it had been out about 18 months or 2 years, it was picked up by Pen and Sword of Yorkshire. And they spent time looking at it, and then they decided they would like to publish it under their banner. which I was happy to do.
Can you explain, Jeff, how you felt when you first got a copy of the book finished with the cover and you're looking at the Triangle Trade? Can you explain?
Very difficult to explain. The feeling you have, the feeling of joy and happiness when you have it, and then it dawns on you that it's all very well having a shiny new book in your hand, but does anybody want to read it? And will anybody enjoy it? So that was the next, that's the hard part, is actually selling the book to other people for real money. Because they're the only ones who are going to say whether it's any good or whether it's lousy.
Looking back at the book, is there much you would alter now?
No, I don't think so. Because I was constrained in the parts of history. Mm-hmm. 1807, when the slave trade was made illegal for British ships to carry slaves. Well, I started the timeline in 1804, so it grew into towards 1807 and the work that the anti-slavery movement did to make it illegal.
Yeah.
So I couldn't go beyond 1807 because that was the end of the book.
Is there going to be a follow-up?
Yes, I'm researching the follow-up now, and I've done about 13,000 words on it. But we're trying to market the book. Marketing the book has been a lot longer and harder than actually writing it, I think.
Really? Wow.
Well, because I'm from an operational background rather than a sales background.
Right.
And if you're not a salesperson, it's difficult to approach somebody and knock on the door and all that type of stuff. Even when I had my own company, I never really liked knocking on doors.
The book's called The Triangle Trade.
Correct.
What do you want people, when they've put the book down, to think? What do you want them to take from the book?
In the 1800s, the early 1800s, the late 1700s, they accepted slavery. Only a few people objected to it. Yet we've still got slavery today in different parts of the world. And we no longer have the European slave trade, but we do have it in the Middle East and the Africa, in the East Africa to the Middle East, the slaves today. So, but the reader, if he enjoys it and he thinks it was a damn good read, that's enough for me. Because I'm not trying to preach, it's a novel to entertain. And it's only the basic. The slave trade is the backcloth to the story.
Yeah.
It's not the heart of the story. The heart of the story is the hero proving you don't have to be in the slave trade. So there's no actual slaves in the sense of attacking or carrying the slaves and all that type. That's only a backcloth. I don't know if you've seen the front of the book.
I've got it in front of me right now. The chains, the hands. It's a very powerful picture.
It is, yes. It's grab me. That's what we hope on the shelf of the bookshops.
Fantastic. Jeff Woodland, congratulations. All the luck in the world with the book. It's called The Triangle Trade. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much for calling.